Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Okay, we are in Bezalel Hashem, Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Tes. We ended last week, and I'll give a brief recap of the gist of what happened last week. There was a very fine picture emerged. And what basically is happening is that Hashem and Eliyahu are agreeing on Eliyahu stepping down from his role as the Navi for Klal Yisrael. Because, in very short, what happened was Hashem basically conveyed, Eliyahu says, I can't handle seeing your name being downtrodden. I can't handle seeing your name being disgraced. I'm a kanoi, as we explained. Kanoi in the true sublime sense means a person who is so connected to Hashem that he can't handle seeing anything that goes against Hashem. We're not talking about a person just with a volatile nature. Kanos, the real kanos, it's like the Mesilas Yesharon says, it's me anfei ha'ava. It's one of the branches of Avas Hashem. And therefore Eliyahu says, I can't bear this. To the extent that he says to Hashem, take my life. And Hashem gives him a vision, which the Mefarshim explained, each one in its different, slightly different style, but in which Hashem basically says to Eliyahu, the fire and brimstone are not what need to be operating now. They're not working. We discussed that the other time, 2 weeks ago. They're not working. It's not going to have the effect, whatever it is. Right now, what's needed is be able to live in the reality of the Averis going on and continue conveying the message softly, gently to those who will be receptive. And Eliyahu's mind-boggling response is basically, according to the Malbim, I can't do it. I can't. Now, does this mean he couldn't do the words? Certainly he could. Hashem tells him, this is what I want you to do. But Eliyahu said, I am not capable of really being that. Not capable of really being that. I know that you, Hashem, with your divine sentiments, are capable of letting go of your own honor, but I'm not on a madrega to be able to do that. Because of my intense love for you. So what we saw last week was that there was this fine split of how, on the one hand, this disqualified him from continuing to be the Navi, while on the other hand, this is what brought him to the peak of his own personal shlemus. Both almost conflicting things going on at the same time. This is Eliyahu reaching a climax in terms of his own career, to the extent that Moshe David Vali says that this vision was mamish something that paralleled some of the greatest visions of all time. It happened in the same place that David, that Moshe saw the Yud Gimel Midas, and that whole Hakadamah, that he wasn't even as a Navi, he had to first rise above physicality, right? He had to eat that special cake that gave him the craft to go for 40 days without food and drink. He had to be at Har Sinai. This was not an ordinary Navua, right? This expressed the climax he had reached in terms of his own personal godless, and Hashem is telling him, and fine, there, you've done your tafkid in this world.
Did anything actually happen in the cave? Or at the end of the day, it was the same Eliyahu 10 minutes before the cave was after the cave. Which is a stempel on who he was to that point.
So according to the way the Malbim set it up, it's not that something happened in the cave per se, but in bringing him to the cave, Hashem already moved him. He began the transition from a physical person to complete spirituality. He was already somewhere in between. What exactly that means, I don't know. But he says that was the pshat in that cake, that was the pshat in this whole process. Eliyahu is starting to move out of his physical existence, but he's still here in this world. Okay? He says this is also hachana for what we know is later to come, that Eliyahu goes up to Shamayim in a fiery horse and fiery chariot. He already was already somewhere in between body and pure spirituality at that point. So really seeing a person who is reaching one of the highest levels a human being ever reached, is Eliyahu making it onto that Hall of Fame of, you know, those unique stars glowing in the sky of our history. But then Hashem tells him, Lemaisa, your successor is going to be Elisha ben Shaphat. Now we're already familiar with the name Elisha. But here we're going to move, we're going to begin now. We're going to see that at this point, it was not like Elisha. Like Elisha was not a Talmud of Eliyahu. They had nothing to do with each other at this point. In fact, as we're going to see soon, Elisha wasn't a Navi, wasn't in that, on that road at all. At this point, he's a completely obscure person. Let's see. So, pasuk yud tes, vayelech misham. Eliyahu went away from there. And again, Hashem had simply named this man. Nobody knew who he was. An obscure person. Vayimtza es Elisha ben Shaphat. He found Elisha ben Shaphat. V'chayresh shneim asa tzmadim lefanav. He was plowing 12 pairs of cattle. 12 pairs of cattle. What that means is, he was overseeing. There were 12 pairs of cattle plowing, and they were all working there. Each one had a person working with it, and he was in the 12th one. But the point is that he was overseeing the operation. These were his, the Mefarshim say, these were his father's workers. This was his father's property, and he was in charge of the operation. He was and he's plowing, right? Involved in a very material profession. Vayavor Eliyahu passed by. Vayashlech adartoy elav. And he cast his cloak over him. So the Mefarshim all say that his plowing 12 pairs of cattle here are symbolic of his madrega. Mishtelitzu to the they bring in here, they parallel it to the 12 cattle that represented the 12 Shvatim back in the Beis Hamikdash. If you remember, the big pool, what, the Yamshel Shoyma, that's right, the big pool is supported by 12 cattle, right? So in different ways, the different Mefarshim express that he was engaged in great things. Rav Moshe Lev Edvali, in his Kabbalistic terms, conveys a certain picture that makes this whole thing very, very rich and inspiring. Basically, the way I'm understanding it, what comes out of Rav Moshe Lev Edvali is like this. Elisha ben Shaphat was not from the Bnei Nevi'im. You know what the Bnei Nevi'im were? These were the people who were sitting in the yeshivas of the Nevi'im, studying to become Nevi'im. These people left a life of material pursuit and were out there just engaging in pure spirituality. Mamish Prushim, epitomizing Prishus, outside of this world, not engaged in any material affairs. Elisha is not that. Elisha is the foreman of his father's team of plowers. He's very much involved in worldly work. Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yutes. But what? And here's the point. He reached his shleimus in his material work. He went about, this really shouldn't be a chiddush, I don't know if it is a chiddush, maybe it's not a chiddush, maybe it is a chiddush. And that is that there is no area of life, or there's no lifestyle. Let's say when you're talking, okay, within halacha, yes? If you're a gambler, or if your profession is drug dealing, lo dibarnu, right? But there is no profession, there is no lifestyle within the realm of halacha that does not lend itself to extreme greatness, to supreme greatness. Okay, so sometimes the way I'll ask the question is, which profession is most conducive to ruchnius? What's that?
Farmer.
Why do you say that?
Because he really feels he's dependent upon Hashem's rachamim.
Okay, so what about the doctor whose whole asik is being a conduit of Hashem's rachamim?
Okay.
And what about the person who's engaged in Torah study all day? And what about the teacher who's raising up new Torahs of Avdei Hashem?
Isn't it the opposite? Doesn't the farmer believe that his hard labor
that makes him succeed as a farmer, and the doctor, oh. On the other hand, believes that he's superior intelligence.
And the who?
He's superior intelligence, the doctor.
He thinks he's smarter than you.
Exactly. So really, this is all bringing out our point. Every productive profession, okay, anything you're doing, will have its ruchnius tikkun challenges, and those challenges are precisely what makes it into a realm of ruchnius opportunity. A businessman can either say it's not such a great position to be in because you're constantly being challenged with mammonus, right? With all kinds of mammonus issues. But that's not really the way to say it. The way to say it is, a person who's in business is given the chance to succeed and excel in the realm of shleimus and mammonus. Okay? On the contrary, right? The way the Mesilas Yesharim says it, many people will achieve great levels in various areas of chassidus, right, of devotion, but this, mammonus, is one of the hardest areas for people to really excel in. So on the contrary, businessman, for the same reason that you're saying it's not so conducive spiritually, on the contrary, it's an opportunity to excel in one of the greatest areas of ruchnius. And the truth is that this is true for every profession that a person is in. Just what you have to, the work is in your mind to be able to translate it into avodas Hashem, and not just to be involved in some material pursuit like everybody else. Any profession that you're doing, other people in the world are also doing, nothing to do with ruchnius. But lemaisa, Hashem set this world up as a world with all kinds of material aspects to it. All the different professions that come together to create a functioning world are Hashem's plan, and it's Hashem's plan for Klal Yisrael to be a nation that provides that whole picture. And therefore, yes, a person can reach shleimus, and a person can reach very, very great madregas in whatever it is he's doing. Now, if a person is making the wrong choices, and a person is specifically choosing what's more convenient, what's more lucrative, etc., his cheshbon is not ruchnius. Obviously, that has to be qualified, because when you're choosing a profession that you're going to support your family with, you're obviously going to be figuring, what am I going to be making money on? Okay, but my point is, when your focus is not the right focus, this won't apply. When a person's focus is, when a person is constantly asking himself, why am I doing all this? You need to make a living. Why do you need to make a living? And translating all into Avodas Hashem, then on the contrary, whatever it is you're doing is an opportunity for greatness. And therefore, ultimately, it's important. People say we're here to learn Torah, right? Tafkid of the Jewish man is to learn Torah. It really has to be rephrased. The tafkid of the Jewish man is to get close to Hashem through the opportunities provided in this world. Torah is one of the most important opportunities, and you have to be prioritizing right. But whatever circumstances you are in life, and whatever profession you're doing, whatever life requires you to do, that is your opportunity for greatness. And when I say greatness, I mean, what I'm saying now is Mamish L'Mesiel HaSisharim. L'Mesiel HaSisharim says that a person doing the most simple, we'll talk in our terms, a garbage man, is capable of reaching levels of chassidus equal to a person who's parush and sitting and learning all day long, because it's a question of how are you going to make the most out of whatever it is you're doing to translate it all into Avodas Hashem. So Elisha, as we're seeing here, he was the foreman for his father, he was in charge of his plowers, but Elisha was a man, a pious man. Everything that he was doing in the context of Avodas Hashem, living his life to the maximum. In terms of what does Hashem want me to be doing now? How does he want me to be going about this, etc.? And he reached the level of that Hashem, this is Mamish so inspiring, that out of Klal Yisrael, Hashem was saying, okay, who's going to be the next Navi to Klal Yisrael? Who's going to ever think of, you start looking in the yeshivas, you start looking at Bnei Nevi'im, right? Hashem says, 1 minute, I see someone excelling more than most of the people around him, more than perhaps the Bnei Nevi'im, the Talmidei Chachamim, etc. I see him, I'm going to put him into position now. He's not ready to become a Navi, right? You have to go through certain processes in order to become a Navi. But Hashem is saying, he's ready for me to give him that opportunity. He's ready to graduate. He made the most. He maximized the material opportunities that he had in this world.
He's a Ben Navi, but he's not a Ben
Navi. Not. By the way, when I say Ben Navi here, I want to stress, I don't mean the son of a Navi.
The student
of Navi. He is not. It had nothing to do with the school of Navur.
Okay.
But this is the point.
What was his relationship to Eliyahu?
No relationship. They never met each other before. But when Hashem is telling Eliyahu, you are going now to train in, to groom your successor, Hashem's name as the successor, this obscure man, Elisha ben Shaphat, who's the foreman for his father in the plowing and in the agriculture, the farming.
Famous midrash about like Eliyahu Navi meeting this fisherman who has that type of Talmud Torah, and Talmud Eliyahu gives him two words to learn Torah. Well, no, to say it like this, he tells him, do you know how to learn two tie knots and learn all that kind of all these things. That you might have met somebody yourself as a fisherman, but like as far as Navi, what did I get there?
It's two answers. First of all, maximizing yourself as a fisherman includes having the Torah you need to be having alongside your career. We have to understand that. Everything that we said now should not be taken as an exemption. Right, when we talk about that a person can, by applying himself right to the profession of a doctor, right, can reach the ultimate madregas and avodas Hashem, part of the madrega is the challenge of cutting out the time for your learning while you're a doctor. Right? We also won't say it doesn't exempt him from three tefillos a day because his greatness is going to be in the medical profession. No, there are aspects, just as we understand that the medical profession, you have to find the ways of turning it into chesed, you also have to find the ways of integrating the Talmud Torah into the day. It has to work with the three tefillos. Part of the greatness of the businessman is how he's able to cancel a meeting because it's mincha time. It's not just that he's doing the money the right way. It's that he's juggling it with the broader spectrum of his chiyuvim. So Eliyahu is telling this fisherman, you might be a fine fisherman, but on the contrary, the truth is this fisherman was using his fishing as an escape, right? I don't know if he even was in the realm of excelling in Avodas Hashem as a fisherman. But whatever the case is, even if he was, if you come and say, well, I'm a fisherman, I can't be learning, so you're using it as an escape. And that's where it gets tricky. Because if a person, let's say a person, for example, has the opportunity to completely dedicate his life to Torah learning, without suffering financially, be okay financially, he can make a lot more money this way. And really, what's motivating him is that he wants to make a lot more money. So we're not going to say, okay, so I'll choose that, and then I'll excel there, and I'll reach my maximum. No, you're kidding yourself. Part of that whole process is making the right choices, right? But lemaisa, today, you're in the position that you're in. You don't have the practical opportunity of going to, you know, let's just drop it on, go to Koyla. You have a family to support. You have your life's reality. Realize that your greatness lies in that reality. It lies in the profession that you're doing. Again, I'm assuming that you are not a professional gambler, but it lies in the profession that you're doing. It lies in your career as a father to these specific children, as a husband to this specific spouse, etc. The greatness available to you is in the reality of your life. Okay? This was the story of Elisha. Now, you made another point, and that is that you can't go straight from there to being a Navi, and that's true. He's not going to. But in those great days, when a person reached the right place, and in this world, there was still, you can move into the realm of Navor, Hashem said, I'm going to bring him into the process of becoming a Navi. He's going to have to start the process. But Hashem says this person has maximized his material opportunities. We're going to move him on to the next level. Okay. So now, Eliyahu passes by Ashlecha Dauta Elov. He casts his cloak over him. So Elisha dropped everything. He left the cattle. He went running after Eliyahu. He accepted the invitation. What was the invitation? Where was the invitation? What happened? Cast his cloak after him as he walked by. So the Mefarshim say a number of things. The Mefarshim say that Elisha understood that by doing over, he was hinting to him, I'm going to take you under my wing. What's that? So apparently Eliyahu was not. Meaning, he knew who Eliyahu was. Eliyahu was very distinct. You see later that people knew what he looked like. His description was very unique, and people knew what he looked like. Presumably, he knew.
Didn't you have him like that? Elisha was also there, like at the Harakama at the same time.
Elisha? That's right. It says that he poured the water over Elio's hands. And it says that he was Meshamish him, but here it seems that he first was joining up with him here. You know what? I don't know.
Oh, we know later on. Or said it back there.
Said it back there. Said it back there. To check that out, I hear. Good Ha'ara. Right, they had encountered each other. That's right. They had encountered each other. Right, right. The Mepharshim also add that the cloak specifically was a symbol of Nevuah. For some reason, Nevi'im wore cloaks. I don't know why, but for some reason, Nevi'im wore cloaks. From the Mepharshim Shal, the Pesukim, that I talk about when Hashem says, I'm going to take away the Nevuah from the Nevi'im, so I'm going to take their cloaks away. They won't wear the cloak of Nevuah anymore. So somehow, the cloak symbolized Nevuah. The Mepharshim Shal, the Bali adds that if you remember, when Eliyahu was standing at the entrance to the cave and the Shekhinah went by, he covered his face with his cloak. So this cloak was exposed to that presence of the Shekhinah. It was now, it had sponged up Shekhinah in it. So just throwing the cloak over him already gave him a certain spirit. According to this, even if he wouldn't have known who he was, that would have provided him with the Ruach. Whatever it is, he comes running after Eliyahu. He runs after Eliyahu. He said to him, Eshkana le'avili mi. Let me go kiss my father and mother. Goodbye. And then I'm going to come along with you. So he told him, Leich shuv, go back. Kimel sisi lecha. I'll translate this two ways. A number of the Mepharshim say that he said, he's like telling, yes, go ahead, go part with your father and mother, because me'osisi l'cha, everything that I've been doing up till now is now going to be you.
No, why? Just outside of this. Is that a problem?
Who was Elisha's wife? Who was Elisha's wife? Not. It doesn't have to be a problem. Eliyahu, I don't know. Eliyahu, you know what? Eliyahu we cannot manage with, because if Eliyahu was about 600 years old by now, his wife might have been passed on at a ripe old age 500 years earlier. But
Aisha said Eliyahu they need to get or doesn't need a...
whole Claire, that's right. But that's the theoretical. Shiloh. Elisha, it's possible this is not a contradiction. It could be that he was going to come along with him with his wife, meaning... But now he doesn't get into it. But he's going along to study with him. Maybe he should have been going with his wife. There were people who were on the move. Shmuel Hanavi was on the move. He was a married man. That's also true. It's possible that it was leaving for periods at a time, which was certainly common, not only for learning Torah purposes, but even just for business purposes. So it's also possible.
Here, like, say you're leaving your father because someone's got to run the business. Why do you have to say you're leaving your mother?
If anyways,
you bring in ancillary people, it may as well mention your wife also.
Right.
That's why.
Yeah, if we just want to give an assumption, we can assume that, yeah, he's going to take his wife along. Okay. Rashi and the Radak say that, no, he says, Lech Shuv Kimal Sisulacha, he told him, go back to your work. What do I have with you? Like, what? It was like a little bit of a put off just to test his conviction. Whatever the case is, he says, I want to go kiss my father and mother.
This is how Elisha learned to be Doche Kichazi.
Oh, I hear. Okay. I'll just know something very interesting that Ramosha David Bali says. See this? Makes sense. He wants to go give his mother and father a parting kiss. Okay. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says something very interesting. He says, I want to go kiss them. He says, before I move on to this new level, I want to go to kiss. You suck in, right? When you give a kiss, you suck in. Since I want to go just draw some more of their ruach to support me, to give me the ability to be able to hold on to this madrega and to move forward with it. Which is an amazing thing. Because he's pairing up with Elio now. What are his parents? Right? Apparently the answer is no. The answer is no. A person does need his parents. A person draws his madrega off his parents. And on the contrary, this was a very, very clear piece of Torah Hashkafa that whatever madrigas I'm hoping to achieve, I'm going to be building off what my parents put into me. I'm going to be building off what my parents put into me. I'm not becoming an old person now. I heard a statement from Rav Shach, not from Rav Shach, from the Talmud of Rav Shach. A very surprising statement, and I don't know to explain it, but Rav Shach said this in a very strong way. He said, I have not yet encountered a case of a person who is greater than his father. Now, Rav Shach never met a Baal Tshuva. He met Baal Tshuva. Obviously, what he's saying is, in some form or the other, and whoever heard it was not able to get the pshat out of it. But obviously what he's saying is that at the end of the day, it's possible that you will lemaisa reach objective levels that are greater than your parents. But whether you like it or not, they are your link to the past of the Jewish people, and we draw our spiritual vitality off of our connection to the past of the Jewish people. They are linked to Sinai, right? That's the famous Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky story. Everybody knows the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky story. We just say, you don't know the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky story. I usually could just say, see the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky story. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was once on a plane, sitting together with, I think it was Yitzchak Navon. I'm not sure. Was it Yitzchak Navon? One of the big names in the state of Israel, but he was already, they were both, I don't know, in their 80s, 90s, and Yitzchak Navon was not operating in that capacity anymore. What was he now? He was an old man whose children tolerated, if they had to, right? Used to be a very contributing member of society. And he's sitting next to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky on the plane, and he saw the way Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's grandchildren were tending to him, not just the care that they gave him, but also the awe and reverence that they related to him with. And he said, not what I experienced, right? The awe of reverence and awe and reverence wore off with age. What's the pshat? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in typical Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky style, told him, you taught your children to believe that you all come from monkeys. So you're one link closer to the monkey. Why should they respect you? They're enhanced. So we taught our children to believe that they come from Amat Har Sinai. I'm their link to Hashem's revelation to them. And that's why they have this reverence for me. So, lemaisa, in one way or the other, even if a person, let's say if a person is, you know, I'm not going to try too hard to explain it. I'll just keep this concept out there, right? That we're drawing off our parents in terms of the spirituality. We said we're going to go, we're going to learn by Choshev Rabbeim, etc. But lemaisa, we're drawing off the spiritual vitality that they gave us.
So why is it that in a lifeboat case, down at the father, Boris Olam Hazeh, and Jesus Olam Habav, them is the father who brings us to both?
Well, directly, it's obviously the Rebbe bringing you to both, because the father, he can give you koiches, but they can stay latent, right? It's the Rebbe who, b'fayal, is enabling you to get there. Okay. I'll just add also, besides that, let's just note the more basic piece, the menschlich type piece here, that with everything going on, he's not losing perspective, he's not losing what ought to be happening now. There was a ma'aseh with a boy from a boy who became a Baal Tshuva in South Africa. His parents were not religious, and he ended up making his way to the Chevron Yeshiva. And he was going to be going home. I understand that in South Africa there are many, like, more traditional Ashkenazim. It's like an unusual phenomenon. Here in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have that so much. Like more traditional Ashkenazim, that not religious, but have epis the flavor. But so this boy is going to be going back home for Yom Tov to South Africa. He went into the Mashgiach to part with the Mashgiach before he left. And the Mashgiach said, you know, you're going to be going home from Ben Azmanim now, you're going to be facing serious challenges. So the boy said, yes, I know. You know the kashrus in the home is not up to standard, and you know, I'm going to be facing Shabbos, etc. I realize, I know the challenges I'm facing, and I already have my ways of dealing with it. So Rav Meir Chodesh said, no, that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about the challenge of kibud ava'im in the situation that you're in. Don't forget that. You're going to be struggling for the kashrus and the Shabbos. There's another, right up there with the Shabbos and the kashrus, is the kibud ava'im as well. Okay. So now we move on. And let's continue studying what it looks like. This person who taka, the conscientious person who utilized all of his koichas, and this is a man with great koichas, he ends up becoming Elisha, right? Utilized all of his koichas to maximize the material life he was living for Avodas Hashem. So how does he move on to this new stage that's being offered to him now? So Vayoshev Me'acharov. So he goes back, he leaves Eliyahu. Vayikach es semed habakar vayizbachehu. He took the pair of cattle and he slaughtered it. In other words, what's he doing? What he's doing here is very, very clear. He's taking, these were my kalim, my means, my vehicles of Avodas Hashem up till now. Now, I'm not just dropping them and moving on. Adarabba, all the Avodas Hashem that I've been doing with these kalim up till now will now culminate in me taking these very oxen that I've been working with up till now. It's going to culminate in me offering them as a carbon. Ubekliya bakar bishlam. And bishlam habasar. And then he took, this is all very thought out. Then he took the plows, meaning he wants to take everything he's been doing up till now. He doesn't want to just start a new chapter, end at the beginning of the chapter. The chapter that he's in now is going to be maximized to transition him, to move him onto this next stage. So the cattle, he's going to offer as a sacrifice. The plows, the actual wood and everything, he uses them to cook the meat of these offerings. And then what does he do with the meat? He made a suda for all the workers there, and he fed it to them. First of all, he's making a suda, the Mefarshim say simply, he's making a suda, a celebration for what he's just been offered. And in addition, Rav Moshe Lev Adwalia once again puts this into perspective of him knowing well how to maximize this matzav right now. Because as I'm about to embark on a new journey, let me end it off with staka. Who are people plowing? Presumably poor people. He had a big, beautiful suda for them. He's going to end it off with tzedakah. What's the pasuk of?
His father agreed.
What's that?
Hope his father agreed.
So I guess we could presume that he did, right?
And hope we got a nice severance package also, because they're employed now.
Naveen, them. Right. Well, no, his father will obviously have to find, the plowing is going to have to go on. I wonder if this all belonged to him. I don't know. Maybe it belonged to him.
The rabbi says he's very rich.
What's that?
What's he doing?
Is he How did he? One minute. It says vayizbachehu. Vayizbachehu. Which presumably means that he made a shlam. Oh, this vayizbachehu simply means shechita? Mm-hmm. What's that? Is that the pshat here?
Yeah.
Perhaps. It's just a suda. Sami Baswahi. Okay, let's assume so. I didn't think of that. Okay, we'll move on. Okay, Vayelech Achrei Eliyahu, and he went after Eliyahu Vayishol Seyo, and he began serving him, right? Here's the famous idea that in order to be a full Talmud and really fully absorb the Rebbe, you want to be living with him in his mundane life. Okay. That's that So this is the story of the beginning of the story of Elisha, and the beginning of the end of the story of Eliyahu. Meanwhile, Ben Hadad Melech Aram Kovas es Kol Chelo. Ben Hadad, the king of Aram, gathered his whole army. Ushloishim Ushnai Melech Itoi. He got together with another 32 kings. Mesus Varecheb, a great army of horses and chariots. Vaya'al Vayotar al Shoimroim. He came and he laid siege against Shoimroim.
How many kings are in Canaan originally?
Oh, you're right. Doesn't it say that there were 32 kings there?
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
It does sound familiar. Yeah. But here we're talking Aram anyways. We're clearly talking Kutzlar.
Right. They're coming they're coming back.
Interesting. I hear. Vayishlach malochim el Achav melech Yisrael ha'iro. And he sent messengers to Achav. Vayoy meloy. He says, Koy Omar Ben Hadad. So says Ben Hadad. Kaspecha uz havcha lihu. Your silver and gold is mine. Vinoshecha uvanecha hatoivim lihem. Your wives and your good sons, all mine. Vayan melech Yisrael vayomer. If you remember, one characteristic that we kept on seeing about Achav was that he wasn't known for his backbone, right? If you remember, that was really one of the main characteristics that we keep thinking about. Whatever it is.
What happened all of a sudden when he was Malach B'Kippah, last we heard, and now all of a sudden
things are turning against him. I don't know. Well, we definitely have the concept of stars rising and going down, right? This is apparently a new star on the scene. Vayan Melech Yisrael. So Achav responds and says, Vayomer, he says, Kidvarcha Adoni HaMelech. It's as you say, Lecha Ani V'chol Asher Li. Me, everything that's mine is all yours. No problem. Just let me be. Vayashuv HaMelechim. Now what does this mean? Does this mean that that's it? Like he's ready to close up shop and they're going to carry everything off and that's that? So the Mefarshim say, we'll go Al Derech HaPshat first, okay, before we get into the famous Chazals here. And the Mefarshim say that he understood him to mean, what do you mean, actually come and carry everything off? He understood him to mean, you're going to be a vassal. Right? You're going to pay tribute to me, everything will be mine. And right? That was common enough a phenomenon. Say that Achav is ready to surrender and become a vassal. But then, he said, no, that was not Ben-Hadad's intent. So the messengers came back and said, Koyomar Ben-Hadad Leymar. Here's what Ben-Hadad says. Kishalachti elecha leimar. When I sent to you saying, Kaspecha uzhavcha, benoshecha uvanecha li titein, give me all your gold and silver and your women and children. I don't know if you quite understood what I meant. Let me make it clear. Kim ka'es machar, at this time tomorrow, eshlach es avoda elecha, I'm going to send my servants. Are you agreed? Okay. So I'm going to send my servants. A lot of big moving trucks. V'chipso es beischa, and they will go through your house. V'es batei avodecha, and the houses of your servants. V'hayo kol machma deinecha, and everything that the eyes would desire of yours. Yasimu b'yadam v'lakachu, they will take in their hands and they're going to go off. So in other words, he's clarifying, I didn't mean that you'd be a vassal. I mean that I'm going to empty the place out. Gold, silver, and people.
Off to the secret tunnels.
What's that? Off to the secret tunnels, right? So, Vayikra Melech Yisrael, they call Ziknei Aretz. So he called together the elders, Vayomer, and he said, Du'una Ur'u. Here, look and see, Kiro Azem Evakish. He has it in for us. Kisholach Elai. When he sent me a message saying, Linoshai v'lebonai, v'lekaspi v'lezhavi, demanding that I surrender to him, my wives and my children and my silver and my gold, lo imanati mimenu. I didn't hold it back. I was ready to surrender. But he's going further. So, v'yemu elav kol azkenim v'kol ha'om, So the elders and all the people said to him, Al tishma v'lo itoivu. Do not listen to him. Do not agree. Vayomel malachei ben Hadad. So he tells the messengers of Ben Hadad, Imru l'adoni ha-melech, tell my master the king, like he's still speaking submissively, right? He's scared. He says, tell my master the king, the first message, the way I got the first message was, that I'm ready to do. Okay? But the second message, it's not already, I'm not going to fulfill. I can't. Right? He's kind of like still speaking submissively. I can't do that. So, the messengers went back. They delivered the message to Ben-Hadad. Ayishlach elov Ben-Hadad. So Ben-Hadad sent back, you're not agreeing to my second message. He says, Kayasun li elehim v'koyesifu. So and so shall the gods do to me. Im yispike afa shoymroin l'sha'olim l'kol ha'om asher b'raglai. I don't even think that there's enough soil in Shoymroin to support the feet of all the army that I have with me. And here all of a sudden, Achav digs in. Up to now he's been speaking submissively, all of a sudden Achav digs in. In other words, Ben Hadad saying, I'm going to completely decimate you.
What would you want?
What's that?
She was the one who's that
always...
Right, and she doesn't want to be handed over to Ben Hadad.
Okay. The truth is, when we see him actually going to battle, I shouldn't overstate the spineless element, because when we see him going to battle, he was a leader and a strong leader, even in his death. We'll see. What does he say now? Vayan Melech Yisrael Vayomer. The king of Israel responded and said, Dabru, hey, give him a message with a different tone. Al Yishalel Choygel Kimfateach. Is he going to come and he's going to decimate us?
A person who's first girding his weapons shouldn't talk all triumphantly like a person who's taking off his weapons after a battle. You didn't fight anybody yet. You didn't win the war. In other words, Achav is challenging him, right?
So his tone completely changed. And then when Achav heard, when Ben-Hadad heard this,
he and the kings who were with him were out. They had their sukkos, right? They had their, sukkos. We can just leave it at that. Outside of Yerushalayim. They were all drinking there. Vayoymer elavodav simu vayasimu alayim. He said, okay, let's lay down the siege. They lay down the siege. So, let's end with the famous Chazal. Continue this next week, that there was more going on here.
Again, they go back, and what it seems to be is that Ben Hadad sends that whole message, give me everything of yours, gold, silver, wives, children. Achav says, no problem. And he sends back again and says, okay, so I'm going to take your gold, silver, wives. So we already gave the Peshat of the Mefarshim. But if you just look at the Psukim, he basically comes and says, okay, so I'm going to take them. And all of a sudden, Achav says, no. So, note, there was a little bit of a change. He says, I'm going to send them, they're going to take everything, and they're going to take machmad einecha, what your eyes cherish, what your eyes covet. The Chazal say he added one thing to the list. Sefer Torah. Machmad einecha is the Sefer Torah. That's the machmad einecha of the Jewish people. Note, the Jewish people of the 10 tribes. Okay, that's also being described. The Torah of the 10 tribes is also being described as Machmad Einecha, right? What your eyes cherish. And here's the message to Achav. I'm going to take your gold, your silver, your wives, and your children, Seder, and the Sefer Torah. And here is where Achav, with all of his rishis, that already not. That he's not going to do. Does Chazal tell us?
Only one Sefer Torah in all of Shalom.
What's that?
There's more than one Sefer Torah.
Simply understood, he's talking about... Well, I don't know if you should say simply understood. The Mefarshim say he was actually talking about the Sefer Torah that Achav had as a king. Remember the halacha? That a king has to have his own Sefer Torah? Actually, supposed to have two. But it was enough that he was coming and demanding one. I am not going to hand a Sefer Torah over to the hands of the Arelim. The hands of the uncircumcised.
What was the intention of Ben Hadad?
What's that?
What was Ben Hadad's intention? Change your religion?
Ben Hadad's intention was exactly this. His point was to put down the Jewish people, to triumph not only over the Jewish people, but also over their belief, also over their God. Which again brings out the point that apparently the Jewish people are still characterized as a nation serving Hashem.
What happened to the Agalim? Maybe that's what he wanted.
So apparently they knew clearly enough. Apparently, this is Adarabba. This is part of the point that we're seeing here. With everything going on in the Aseres HaShvatim, it was still clear enough when he spoke about the Machma Deinecha, with all the Agalim, with all the Baalim, with all the Asheris, Machma Deinecha stayed the Sefer Torah. It was still the Sefer Torah.
So surprising that Isabel allowed the Sefer Torah to even be around. You know, little that Ahav was so into it.
So this is something that we're also going to see later. Isabel, with all of her wickedness and with all of her power, was never able to actually eradicate Torah as the law of the country. Because even later, remember when the whole story with Novice takes place? How does she go about her plot? Through Torah law, right? It's all through Torah law. She would not have been able to do that. She can play with Achav this way, she can play with Achav that way, she can bring this in and that in. But to actually go and change the fundamental structure of the Jewish people, she did not have the power to do that. Because even Achav wouldn't have had the power to do that. A king would not have had the power to do that. I shouldn't say that in a general way, because there were kings who actually did do this to an extent. But I say this in a general way, not in an absolute way. In general, it would not have worked for a king to come along and say, we are replacing the Torah. Yeravam did not do that. Right? Yeravam didn't do that. Kind of made the Agalim work with the Torah with a lot of skillful juggling. Right? We already discussed that back at the time. Avodah Zarah didn't do that either. Avodah Zarah was a little more in the back door, this way, that way, right? Just like in our times, we see Tumah can make its way through the back door, even in places where the Torah is being kept. The Malbim says that Ben Hadad was delivering more of a message to Achav, and he's saying, you got all this gold and silver, 1 minute. You can't have the Torah and all the gold and silver. You're not living the way the Torah is telling you to live, right? The Torah tells you that a king, lo yar b'loy kesef v'zehav. You're way beyond that, right? So, give me your gold and silver. Give me the Sefer Torah. You're not living with it.
Extra wives, extra money.
Yeah. But whatever the case is, if we're just taking Chazal, we are saying Lemaisa a testimonial to put in perspective the picture that we have of the of even the 10 tribes and of Achav himself.
That makes sense why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't bring the Korban of Yisrael now, but brought it later when they lost Bachav in Torah. Tchila, they lost the value of the Torah, but Torah is still very...
Well, that's a very chashuv point, especially, right, especially since Chazal actually said beferush that even if they... Oisi Azvu, the Terasi Shamaru, right? The Torah is there. There's still the battery, the means of getting back on track is still there. Say something. Okay. Vehine Navi Echad Nigash Al Achav Melech Yisrael. Now, a Navi came. What was this Navi? This was one of the Naviim who had a lot of interaction with Achav. Michayhu Ben Yimla. We're going to see him. We'll see him more as we go along. Nigash al Achav Melech Yisrael. He came to Achav Bayomer, and he said, "Koyamar Hashem." So said Hashem, "Hago Isa es kol ha'moyna gadol hazeh." Did you see all of these great masses? Hineni noisnoi biyadcha hayoyim. I'm going to deliver these great masses, these hordes, into your hand today. Viodato ki ani Hashem, so that you should know that I am Hashem. Vayomer Achav, and Achav responds, right? He's responding naturally to the Navi as the bearer of the word of Hashem. He asks him, "Bemi, who should do this?" Meaning, this was a very common question asked when the Jewish people were going into war. Who should do the fighting? Who's going to carry this chus that will earn us that promise? Vayomer. So he answered, "Koyama Hashem." Here's what Hashem said: "Binare sorei hamadinos." Binare sorei hamadinos. All the mafarshim give different pshatim here.
They were either hostages. It was a very common phenomenon in earlier times that powerful kings kept hostages of the nations that were under them. They would keep the children of the governors of the nations that were serving them, who were subservient to them, as hostages. In case anybody would want to rebel against him, he'd just kill his son. Kept them in line. So that's one pshat. Another pshat, a similar idea. It means that the different mayors and ministers around Eretz Yisrael, he would keep their sons there. I don't know what the significance would be, Dafka, that these would be the people leading the war. But the Mitzvah says something that does make it fit more, what the significance of these people is. He says that it simply means the attendants of the ministers. These are not valets. Okay? Valets. These are not warriors. Right? They're very, it's a very menial, unskilled job. There's no... And these will be the people to lead the battle. I mean, the point here is that Hashem wants to highlight his involvement here. He wants to highlight the nes that he's about to do.
So they're not even interested in fighting. They want to escape.
Who?
These hostage children.
Oh, that's interesting. He's saying maybe that's the pshat.
You would put people there. That,
you're not going to put them there.
They're not interested.
Ah, okay. Very good. Very good. Very good. Vayomer mi yeser hamilchama. And he says, okay, and who should lead them? Meaning, who should be at the head? Vayomer ata, you go out as the commander in chief. Vayivkoy des nari soyam dinos. So he gathered together these kids. Vayom asayim shnayim ushloishim. There were 232 of them. Vachem pokal des kolam kol bnei Yisrael. Then he got together all the warriors that they would lead. How many is that? Shiva Salafa. 7,000. It's not a very impressive number for an army. Can anybody make the connection of the number 7,000? Why 7,000?
7,000 people that were not going to get killed. That still remain connected to Hashem.
Yeah.
Didn't connect themselves to Baal.
That's what we saw in the previous parak. That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That these were the... They apparently also in the 10 tribes, they were still operating when they could, I guess, with the klal of... The battle, only the greatest go out. The people with the purest records. And Hashem had already said that there are the 7,000 people that absolutely not contaminated themselves at all with the Baal, not even in a subtle way. These are the people going out to war. Okay, we'll stop here. Mid-Sunday. To you.